where you teach and what your Twitter handle is, if you have one. It's good to see that we have people from around the country, from Texas and from New Jersey and from North Carolina and Oregon and Chicago and Maine. Welcome, everyone. Before I introduce our speaker and turn the presentation over to Molly, let me explain a little about how these meetings work. These meetings are recorded and they are available a few hours after the meeting ends. To view the recording, you would come back to the same URL you used to get here tonight. The Global Math community prides itself on being friendly and supportive. The chat room is available for topical and general conversation throughout the meeting. I'll catch your questions for the presenter, so don't worry that she won't notice it in the chatter. Tonight, our speaker is Molly Rodding. Molly is a K-5 math coach from Lexington, Massachusetts. She previously worked in elementary and middle schools in Northern Virginia and Seacoast, New Hampshire. She loves exploring mathematics with teachers and kids in creative, playful ways that promote joyful explorations. She enjoys playing games and puzzles with her two sons, who are 4 and 6. And in the summer, she loves being in her vegetable garden. Welcome, Molly.
Great. Thank you, Lee. It's wonderful to be here and great to see all of you folks who have signed in and logged in. Welcome, everyone. I'm looking forward to our hour together to share about changing the whole and how we're going to use shapes to explore different number relationships. So Lee already shared a little bit about me. I'm currently a math coach and I get to work with all grades K-5. And I absolutely love what I do. I get to be in classrooms. I get to plan with teachers. And I have a fabulous support network of other math specialists in my district. And as Lee mentioned, I come from Northern Virginia before this. And that's where I spent a lot of time learning. And in the first job as an elementary coach, working with teachers there. And previous to that, my first experience in the classroom was teaching middle school, which I loved doing. And now I love being in the elementary level. So I'd like to start off with one idea to connect us, which is learning is about making connections. And so that's why I share a little bit about my story with you, thinking about where I've traveled, some of my interests. I spent some time in the Virginia area, Northern Virginia area, spent time at George Mason University. Previous to that, I did some graduate work up in Maine, where I actually grew up as well. And then previous to that, my undergrad is from Geneseo State, which is in Western New York. So mostly been in the Northeast, but love exploring, love traveling, and love being home with my two boys, playing with them whenever we get a chance to play or be outside. So again, going back to this idea that learning is about making connections, that there'll be hopefully lots of connections you can make through the work that I'll be sharing. Hopefully it promotes some ideas, some questions, some new ideas that you can share with the group here, and that we're all learning together. So we are going to start thinking about different ways. We've done our exploration and our welcome to think about different ways that we're going to use shapes to explore number relationships. So tonight we'll be talking about different variations with this changing the whole that we're going to use pattern blocks, square tiles, and a variety of other shapes to explore how we can problem solve in a way that is engaging and playful for both students and teachers. So this routine that I'll share, and you may have seen variations of it, there's a lot of things that we've done to tweak it, and then some ideas we learn as we go. We learn from the teachers that we work with. We learn from what the students are doing. But we are excited about this work because it's playful, it's fun, the kids are engaged, teachers are engaged as a way of making sense and problem solving. So I'm excited to share some of these ideas with you. things we've played with, tweaks that we've made along the way, and look forward to hearing from you about what's on your mind related to some of these ideas. Throughout the evening, I'll be showing different pictures of some of the work. These come from mostly second and third grade in my school. There are some pictures from a kindergarten classroom as well as a fourth grade classroom, but the activities are adapted or can be adapted from K-5 and definitely beyond as well. So we're going to start off with you jumping in here as well in the chat with this image. What do you notice? What do you wonder? We'll take 2 minutes to think about that. So for those watching the recording of this webinar, I'll capture some of the comments that people are noticing and wondering, thinking about which shapes they see, where there may or may not be a yellow hexagon, thinking about which shapes make up the larger shape, some what ifs about how they might be rearranged altogether, it seems like. Noticing that the quantity of shapes that make up the larger shape varies. Some noticings and wonders about perimeter and area. Lots of interesting noticings and wonderings. So take 30 more seconds. And if you have a chance to read what other people write, often I find that when I hear or read what people notice and wonder, then I notice and wonder even more. There are so many places to take this with all the interesting wonderings or what might we do, what if, lots of places to go with this. And it does somewhat look like a which one doesn't belong, and I do that intentionally and then just have the title, what do you notice, what do you wonder, so students can and adults can notice and wonder and can also think about the structure of which one doesn't belong as another way to talk about it too. So we're going to transition with this idea of getting you thinking about shapes, what makes up these shapes when we have different shapes to make a composite shape, and think about, pardon me, pattern blocks. So that's going to be one of the tools, one of the hands-on pieces that we're going to use for this activity. So with the exploration, we're going to do different designs. We're going to make different designs, and I'm going to go into what that might look like using these pattern blocks. But I want to make sure everyone was familiar with this tool. And so there is a relationship with these. In general, they come with 6 different shapes. You can see a hexagon, trapezoid, rhombus, square, the blue rhombus, the thin tan rhombus, and then the green triangle. For the exploration that we're going to talk about today, we're going to be focusing on the triangle, the rhombus, the trapezoid, and the hexagon. And you'll notice that there is a relationship that you can build other shapes with by combining some of the other shapes as well. So thinking about how we then explore number relationships with this is saying, well, what if we assign a value to each one of these shapes? And again, since they're proportional, there's a relationship between if the triangle is one, six triangles make up the hexagon, so the hexagon is going to be worth six. Or we might say, create designs with an odd value greater than 20, keeping the values of the shapes the same. Or we might say, create triangles. So in that first notice wonder image, there were a couple triangles, different triangles, and now find their values, but now we've changed the values of each of the shapes. So here are some pictures of some students working. I've done this a few years now with my second, third, and fourth grade teams at my school. And the students have the pattern blocks out in front of them. And I was thinking this morning that I think the pattern blocks are at least, maybe not the only tool, but one of the only tools that is literally in every single classroom in our school. That it's used from kindergarten all the way up to fifth grade. When I taught middle school, I used pattern blocks as well to think about those relationships, think about the shapes that we can make. And so here are some pictures of students using the pattern blocks. They'd been given a task, given a goal for the day. They puzzle around, play with the shapes to make what they want, make their design. And then they also have the triangle, the hexagon grid paper to be able to transfer their designs onto the paper. There's a lovely, and we'll talk a little bit more about the structure of this. So students have been introduced to this. If the whole hexagon is worth six, what's the design that you can make that's worth 15? Kids have time to puzzle with this, and we're always focused on let's use the pattern blocks first. Let's explore. What might that look like? Let's play around with it. And there's always this lovely balance of kids chatting, sharing ideas, and then working independently, and then sharing some ideas and looking at what other people are doing, and then working on their own. It's a task that's accessible to all kids. There's minimal language. There's the set of directions. We have some values for the different pattern blocks that we're using. So it's a great task for students that might be ELLs or students that initially aren't sure exactly what to do. If they start seeing kind of just playing around, especially in those initial stages of just let's make a figure, and we don't have to record that one. Let's make a figure and see what we might do with that. It's a lot of fun to play with for adults and kids. And again, going back to the importance, if we were all together, there would be tables and tables of lots of pattern blocks for you to play around with. And that's how we would have started our session today. So we'll be playing around with it in just a moment in a different way, but I want to continue to emphasize the importance of kids and adults playing around with this, with the actual manipulatives in their hands and trying to figure out what are the designs that they are going to make. Here are a few more pictures of students, and these are different tasks. You can see the ones on the bottom row. They were given the task to create a triangle with different values. And the kids went with this one, continued. I think you can see in the bottom left corner, there are about four different pieces of paper that they taped together because they wanted to make the triangle as big as they could. So let's just take about 30 seconds or so to look at these pictures of the student work. And think about, is there anything that you notice, anything that comes to mind, any questions that you have? And I can respond to those. And I saw the comments about the paper. I have in second grade, we've adjusted the size so it actually is almost the same size that it matches the pattern blocks, which for a lot of kiddos is really helpful. Transferring it from your design to the paper can be a real challenge. And so sometimes it's nice to be able to trace it. In third and fourth grade, then we end up adjusting it, making it a little bit smaller so we can add more designs on the paper. And I do have a PDF of a document that has some of the triangle grid paper and then the pattern blocks at the top so that kids could write in the values. for the different challenges. And I think to answer the question about the dry erase, I think it comes right off. That's been my experience. There are different types of pattern blocks out there. So think about what the material is. But if it's one of those, the pattern blocks that are just kind of nice and shiny on top, it should come right off. So we're going to jump in and we are going to play a little bit. You're going to have a chance to play online. If you have access, if you're on the computer and it's easy enough, what I've done is I've created a Google drawing and you can go to this link bit.do/play and then capital CTW number one. And we'll take about 3 or 4 minutes. And if you want to play longer, go for it. For you to come up with some sort of design that is worth 9 1/3. If you want to tweet that out after you're done, you're welcome to do that. Would just love to hear, I'm going to share a couple examples in a moment, but thinking about what did you notice as you played around with this? So we'll take a few moments. Think about, and even if you don't go to this link, think about what might you sketch, and you can sketch it right next to you as well if you have paper and pencil there. What would your design be? The hexagon is worth 2, the trapezoid is worth 1, the rhombus is worth 2/3, and the little triangle is worth 1/3. And I'm going to show a couple examples. So if you aren't able to play right now, you can see what some people have puzzled with, and then you can be thinking about what's on your mind with these images. What else might you explore? So, it should be able to log right in. You should need to make a copy of it. I saved it, so you should open it to make a copy. So maybe try and type it in one more time. And there is a way to rotate the shapes. If you look from where I got this original document, on the right-hand side, there's a link to the person who has more information at his site about different templates. So if you go there, I know he has a list of how you can rotate it just a little bit, or you can take the little circle at the top and rotate it and turn it that way. So as you're playing around with that, thinking about what are you doing? What are you exploring? What relationships are you noticing? If you're looking at these images on the board that are on posted, how do you know the values 9 1/3? What questions do you have? And I'll share a couple more examples. Of things students came up with when they were given this task. And so this is a good question. Are all of these examples that I've shown 9 1/3? And how would you prove it? I know on some of them, I had to go back and double check. I was thinking about how I was counting to make sure. And then I was thinking, well, is there a way I can prove that maybe they're not, or maybe there is a mistake? So there's, just to put it out there, that there are some examples where that we might be able to say, actually, I think there is a mistake here. And some of the student work is how we start that discussion. And what I've found is when students are working side by side, that they take that feedback about that there might be mistakes pretty well from each other. And so that's a nice part of the discussion to say, huh, I think I see this, or they're talking about, I don't think that actually is the same value as this should be. So getting those relationships, and you might notice something of these two pictures. There are some things that are the same, some things that are different. So how can they both be 9 1/3? And in fact, they can't. So thinking about what are the relationships that I notice to figure out if it actually does satisfy the conditions. And there are just so many different ways to play with this. And again, having the pattern blocks in front of you is just, there's something so physical and tactile and fascinating to it and beautiful as you create designs. Often discussions of symmetry come up kind of just naturally to say, how can I make something symmetrical, or I really want this to be symmetrical, and so I need to change something on here. So this is an option for you in terms of doing this as a part of a webinar to play around with this a little bit more. And I've shared this with some fourth and fifth graders at my school to say, okay, we've got access to Google Classroom. What can you do, and how can we share that in another way after we've done it with the pattern blocks? So I'm going to transition to just kind of overview some of the ways that we might make the goals or have as our goals. So as we're doing this, there might be different goals for create a design worth 15. And then another time it's create a design worth 24. And then other options are what size do you, or what shape do you want the final image to be? So create different triangles is a fun one. Use exactly blank pieces to create a design. Use at least one of each piece to create a design worth more or less than a certain value. And that use at least one piece is a fun one, because I find that's another one that kids get to the end and they're like, oh, I didn't use a blue. But then they can figure out kind of that trading, thinking about the relationships there, which is a lot of fun. And then creating quadrilaterals or hexagons, especially with the quadrilaterals or hexagons, that they don't need to be regular and they can look so many different ways. So one option is thinking about different goals that we might have for this. And then the second option is thinking about what are the values of each of the pattern blocks that we're going to use. So thinking that we might use whole numbers, we could use decimals or fractions. In second grade, we've done a lot with money. And so we think about different values of money, and that's how we go into under a dollar. So thinking about it as 50 cents or 25 cents for some of those values. So that's the kind of the first part of this, thinking about how might we use pattern blocks as a way to explore number relationships through shapes, and thinking that we can change the goals, have different goals for this, and then we can also have different values for the amounts. The second piece I want to highlight is using shapes in a different way, and we'll start with one more notice wonder. So what do you notice? What do you wonder? Let's take about 2 minutes for you to look at that image and chat, type in the chat window. What are some of your observations? What's on your mind? So again, recapping some of what I'm seeing in the chat box, thinking about that there is something consistent about all of the designs, thinking about, does the color matter? Does that mean anything? Some lines that are drawn in there, and then some that are just colored in. Thinking about that it reminds someone of a quilt. That overlapping piece also often comes up. Is there part of a square underneath, or am I just looking at what I can see? And then think about those relationships. Take another 30 seconds, think about what do you notice, what do you wonder, and especially thinking about after what other people noticed and wondered, what else is on your mind? And again, there are just so many good things that come up and that I haven't even thought about when you just pose these notice wonders that are coming up from all of you, which is so lovely and fantastic. So, and this is how, when we do this part, which we'll get to in a moment, but how we introduce it to the kids, to just let them do some noticing and wondering. And all of a sudden they're coming up with kind of all of the rules or the structures for what's going to be happening next. And so it takes all of, we don't even need to give all the directions. They've already come up with all of those ideas and we can just kind of piece them together. So this notice wonder routine just is such a great way to introduce so many different things. So I'm gonna transition to the next slide, which does might answer a couple of your questions, thinking about if you see that image that there are now numbers in those spots, or at least in some of those spots. So there are three little orange squares that have the number 6, and then the purple squares now have the number 24 in them. So the same thing when we do this with kids, we reveal a little bit more and then continue what changed, what do you notice, what do you wonder, until we reveal the amount for each one of those shapes. And it is, in this case, we are looking at just what we can see. So we're not worrying about anything that overlaps, just the amount that is visible from kind of the top layer. And so we're thinking about what is the value? What is the amount for each one of these? And these are Steve Wyborny's tile squares, the square tiles, which are a fabulous resource. We've modified our recording sheet that we've used with kids, but it's essentially what he has here in terms of just lots of space to notice and think and organize these shapes in different ways to show what the value is as well. So here's an example of how we started. And we did start with one where it didn't seem like there was an overlapping piece to it, so the kids could just kind of partition it in different ways and say, okay, I see 8 and the 4 and the 2, and then maybe they break them up into a bunch of 4s and a 2 or a bunch of 2s to figure out how much the whole is worth. After they've done that, we might go to a different image but keep the value the same. So something is consistent from the first one, but we're changing a little bit. And then thinking about, okay, the whole one square is worth $8. How much is this whole thing worth? And then using those recording sheets that there's lots of space for them to think about. Then we're going to transition, and we're going lower with this because we want to go down to $2 and then think about that. So we start with the eight, $4, where it does, they've had some experiences with those overlapping. And then we go down to a little bit more complex shape and this $2. And then this opens up to, okay, well then what is kind of that quarter piece worth? We get down to $1 and then we need to partition that off as well. So lots of fun and similar to the other one, that we have lots of space in terms of what we label that. Do we use money, whole numbers, decimals, fractions, variables? There's lots of options for what it might be. It's so versatile. So again, those are from Steve Wyborny. So I recommend everything he has. And this is one of the nuggets that we use in lots and lots of different grades in lots of different ways. So I'm going to share a couple examples of student work And just have you think about what do you notice or what questions do you have on the work that you see in front of you? And I'll share a little bit about the structure that we've used, and we've done on generally on these activity sheets. The front side is what's in the upper left, where there's an image. And this year, we've been doing this a few years now. We've decided to add a key to it for some kids to kind of organize their thinking at the beginning of this. And so eventually, they do get that option to choose, as you can see in the top left. The first few times that students do this, we're all working as from the same hole. So it might be that that hole is worth $24 and now show different ways to figure this out. So there's a lot of rich discussion that can happen there. And then this idea that on the later on, after they've had a variety of experiences, they get to pick what the value is. And it's so interesting to see. This is also a nice one where the colors can often really make the values pop and the patterns pop to say, okay, I can see this 20 is here and a 20 is here because of that green space. And so I love the use of color in these. So I'm going to share one more set of student work. And the question here is, and to the best that you can see it, what questions might you ask these students? So in the top left, there's a little A there. B is on the lower left, and then C is to the right. So it's, what would you ask these students? What questions might you ask them based on the work that you see here already? It's so interesting to watch students work on this and think about, especially that dollar one on C, how they're going from that hole as $1 to the $2, and then it looks like 1 cent. So lots of great questions, and a lot of it is just kind of getting the kids to start talking about it, and then they take ownership because the kids can see it in so many different ways for them to say, okay, this is where I started, or this is how I know. And again, having the kids have those conversations so that they can see what's the same and what's different, to think about what those relationships are and where those mistakes might be. So to wrap up this second section, so the first one we talked about using pattern blocks, second we talked about Steve Wyborne's square tiles, thinking about another way. Certainly this option with the square tiles probably takes a little bit less time because they're not actually physically building anything. And so thinking about time-wise, this can be done in a shorter amount of time. There's different relationships that they notice. The patterns that come out when they add color are really powerful. And then the discussions about what's the same, what's different, what is the total value, and how does that compare to two different ways that you've shown your thinking? All of those questions just get kids talking about those number relationships, and it's really powerful. So now that we've talked about those two as kind of the focus for this, I want to share some ideas around the how. So we have these two options, and I have lots of resources at the end to share with you. And lots of these things can be done pretty easily in terms of low prep. But thinking about the first thing is having the actual manipulative. So having the pattern blocks there, thinking about what you might do with them, what would your goal be, but it's always going back to the hands-on. When I've planned this work with teachers, that's always the first thing. In our PLC meetings, I bring them pattern blocks and they are doing it right there. And that's a really powerful piece because it's so important to experience it, play with it, make those mistakes, have those aha moments, and really puzzle through it. And as I mentioned, the recording piece is another layer to it. There's one thing to make the design, follow the constraints, figure out the value, and then it's another thing to actually put it to paper, which takes practice. So the first part is having the hands-on manipulatives and playing with those. And then the second one is having the opportunities to sketch it, to draw it, to be able to record your thinking. And again, using color in a way that your numbers pop, the connections, you can see the connections between different visuals. So those are two of the pieces that I think are really important. And then the other piece of how the kids are actually engaging in this, that I mentioned how accessible this was, to think about that lots of kids every kid has an entry point to this. There's so many different ways that they can go with this to think about structure for this. So thinking about instead of doing an I do, where as a teacher I would tell you what to do, we do it together as a class, and then you have a chance to do it, thinking about it in a little bit different way. So the structure that we use often is this you, y'all, we structure. So the you is this time where kids get a chance, after given the directions, get a chance to independently puzzle and think by themselves. And again, this is a low floor entry point. Every kid has something that they can do with in terms of just starting to play with the pattern blocks. You have them in front of you. What designs are you going to make? So that's the you part that we really value, that there's independent thinking time where every kid gets to start with what makes sense to them. Then there's a y'all piece where kids start working and they start talking to each other and sharing different ideas, and then ending with the we, where there's a discussion either as a whole group, maybe there's some questions that the teacher facilitates. And so this is often how we introduce use this structure for this changing the whole. So the kids get independent time, they get time to talk with someone else about it, and then there's also a connection made by the teacher. And so I have a short video to share with you from Mike Flynn out of Mount Holyoke. About flipping the classroom, just to kind of capture this you, y'all, we structure. He names it the launch, release, return, but it's the same idea that we're giving kids the opportunity to think and make sense of it at the beginning, and then we're coming back together at the end. So we'll watch this 2.5-minute video and then connect it to this work.
What was math class like for you growing up? Well, if you're like most people, it probably looks something like this. The teacher would lead the lesson demonstrating how she or he wanted you to solve a problem. You practiced with some of your classmates with the support from the teacher. And then you were expected to demonstrate mastery on your own. This is known as the I do, we do approach. Well, in recent years, there have been a lot of efforts to change this. For starters, we need to shift the roles of the teacher from being a deliverer of knowledge to a facilitator of learning. So we eliminate the idea of the stand and deliver approach to teaching. Then we flip the order around and put students front and center in the learning. With this approach, we start with the problem and allow each student to make sense of it for themselves. Then students work collectively and collaboratively to solve the problem using methods that make sense.
Let me see if I mute myself, if that will help.
Mute. To them, all the while sharing and revising their thinking with each other. And then finally, we come in and synthesize the learning based on what students have done. We facilitate conversations among students, and we support them in connecting their own individual thinking to that of their peers. We can visualize this in three key steps. First, there's the launch, where students are introduced to the problem and they work to make sense of it. Then there's the release, where students go off to work on the problem using strategies that make sense to them. During that time, the teacher moves throughout the room, making observations of each student's approach. She might confer with some groups or just listen to their conversations. She may use that time to provide some intervention or support for those that might need it. She may push some students to dig deeper, extend their thinking. Most importantly, she's identifying what key ideas need to come up during the whole group discussion at the end of the session. And finally, there's the return, where the class comes back together to share their thinking while the teacher facilitates the discussion. And because she paid such careful attention while students were working, she's able to orchestrate the discussion and select certain students to share their work so that the class can start finding connections between their strategies. And this moves everyone's thinking forward. When teachers have a clear sense of the ideas they want to develop and they strategically select student work to bring to the discussion, then the teacher's agenda is fueled by student thinking and understanding. The difference is that in this approach, the students hold the authority because their ideas take center stage, not the teacher's. This shift in dynamic creates classroom cultures that truly value student thinking and agency in mathematics.
Oh no. Okay, so we are back, but I'm going to have to go through these quickly and catch up to where we were. So again, thinking about the importance of that structure where the kids have the you time at the beginning to think about what makes sense to them, and then the y'all time where they're working together, sharing ideas, puzzling, playing with different ideas after they talk with someone else, asking each other questions, and thinking about the what ifs. So that kind of lovely buzz of discussion in Tracy Zager's book, Becoming the Math Teacher You Wish You'd Had, chapter 12 talks about this idea that mathematicians work together and they work alone. So she talks about the organic flow of ideas, that there are bursts of chatter, and then there's quiet where kids are working. And then there's more chatter discussing things, and then they're working again. So this lovely hum of conversations, posing questions to each other, and then thinking about how there are connections between their work. So then coming back together with the we, having these opportunities for discussions when students have their work recorded in front of them, thinking about what's the same, what's different. What are different ways to design, make a design with equivalent values? What did you notice as you puzzled through this? What might you try differently next time? Did you make any interesting mistakes? So thinking about how we might bring this back together so that students can continue to explore those number relationships and make connections between different ways to approach the same task. Another layer to all of this that we've played around with is doing 3-week challenges in the classrooms. And this has been a way, kind of how we launched it at my school, to say, can you, as the teachers, can you commit to doing something in your class for 3 weeks, but just for 10 minutes a day? And here's how we did it. And we've done this in multiple grades. And we started off all together. And so let's say if I'm doing this with a third grade, all the third graders come together in one class. We've got 4 sections. And we watched Joe Bowler's video. There's about an 8-minute video about 4 key messages in math. And in that video, she highlights a part where it says, during a 3-week program, participants worked on a task for 10 minutes a day for 3 weeks, and there was permanent brain pathways that were grown. So we use that as the springboard, because we've already done the week of inspirational math at the beginning of the year, to say, let's try this. We're going to work on this challenge for 10 minutes a day, and only 10 minutes a day. And generally, teachers have their students do it at the beginning of the day during morning work time. And then oftentimes it kind of flows into math, or they make other connections to what they're doing in math. But it seemed like a manageable piece for teachers to integrate into their classrooms. So we watched the Joe Bowler video. We have a little movie trailer that stars the classroom teachers, and the kids are jazzed about that, and they love that piece. And then all of the students return to their classrooms to work on the first challenge of the day. And then from then on, they're doing 10 minutes a day or so for 3 weeks. And so right now, my third grade team is actually right in the middle of one of their challenges. And we're working with the pattern block or the square tiles this week. So that's another piece to think about. How might this be manageable in a classroom setting when there's already so much going on? So one option is doing this 10 minutes a day for 3 weeks. If you're interested, here's our snapshot for what we've come to agree on for our third grade. I've worked with another math specialist on this to think about what's an appropriate progression, a meaningful progression for each of the days. So that students can be seeing some connections, but then they keep it still fresh every single day. So thinking about what the goal is and then what the values are and that those are changing as we go along. Week two is all on square tiles. And so that's where we are right now. You'll notice there's a puzzle at home. And so one day a week, we send two copies home with each student so they can puzzle with someone at home, whether it's a sibling, a parent, a neighbor, and puzzle on this because it's so engaging and so much fun. And then week three is a combination of the pattern blocks and the square tiles. And that wraps it up. And then we're able to continue making connections throughout, but it's nice to have this kind of condensed. We've got 3 weeks. It's really focused. And the teachers enjoy it. The kids love it. So it's a win-win for sure. One thing we also do in some of the grade levels at the end of the 3 weeks is to do a gallery walk. So our second grade team just concluded their 3 week challenge a few weeks ago. And on the final day, every student picked out their favorite piece to share, left it on their desk. And then we did a gallery walk to all of the all to the second grade classes to see what students were most proud of. So they got to see across the entire grade what they'd been working on for those 3 weeks. And then I wanted to share a few quotes from teachers that I work with. The first one was just the consistency of the daily routine and that she felt it lent to further investigations each day so that kids knew what to expect, teachers knew what to expect, but it was changing every day. And the same thing for the second quote, just that the kids are excited about what's the goal going to be, what's our challenge going to be today. And then it just connects to so many more things. And Berkeley Everett had some cross number puzzles on, and then there have been some other folks that have done it with pattern blocks. And so then tweaking that a little bit to say, how can we take this idea that we've been working on addition and thinking about number relationships, and then how can we connect it to the cross number puzzle? So we've got more opportunities to notice and wonder, and the kids are so excited about this, and they're trying to figure out what is going on with this puzzle. And then I came back the next day with the directions that their goal was to make each row or column equal 22, given those values. And so that's what they're puzzling on right now, actually. So thinking about all these connections, and it just leads to more puzzles and more playing and thinking about all those different ideas, how they're all connected. And then just to conclude, a few other connections that this leads to is one, if you use Desmos, I've been playing around with the pattern block sort on Desmos for if three hexagons equals one whole and using sort cards in that way, in terms of having kids open sort and sort the cards and numbers however they choose, doing a closed sort where they actually have to work together to find the values that match. Students are able to reflect on how they figured out the value and reason through that. And then on the right-hand side, you can see students were given the directions for drawing a picture, a design that's worth 2.5. So then we had a notice wonder discussion based on that. And then a few other ideas that have been shared via Twitter and other places, other blogs. Simon Gregg has lots of wonderful visuals that are colorful, so they're visually appealing. And then just thinking about what might we do with some of these? How can we tweak them with just a little bit? So noticing, just thinking about different questions we might ask about any one of these, that if the triangle is worth 10, what other numbers do you see? Or if if that green rectangle is worth 25, what other numbers do you see? So lots of different things to play around with that are visually appealing and exciting for kids and for teachers. So these are just some of the pictures that kind of capture the work that we're doing, that we're playing around with numbers. I'm working with teachers, working with other math specialists to think about how do we engage kids and teachers in these really rich discussions around the relationships, to think about both shapes and numbers and how we can do both of those at the same time. So there's just so much, there's the power of playing with these shapes to explore proportional reasoning in lots of different ways, in lots of different grades, and it can look lots of different ways. So I will end similar to I started thinking about that learning is about making connections. So connections between strategies, different areas of math, and especially among students, among learners, among all of us. So we want to continue making these connections. So leave you with this last image to think about, what do you notice? What do you wonder? What else is on your mind? If the rhombus is worth X, what else? To think about this idea of how can we make math more visual, more playful, and more accessible for everyone. So let's take 2 minutes to kind of share out right now whatever's on your mind in terms of this last image, and then we'll open it up for question and answer after that. So lots of things to notice and wonder on this, especially with the color change. Some of you have noted that, that it's not all of them are the typical colors for the pattern blocks. So playing around with that, and I can share the link to that resource as well. And thinking about how might we explore both the number relationship, shapes in general, for thinking about that all of these are hexagons, but look very different. And then thinking about that kids can take this in so many different ways. So yes, I'm excited to hear what's on your mind, what thoughts are you're thinking of in terms of how this connects to your work. Our students have really enjoyed these hands-on explorations of building the shapes, puzzling through a challenge of the day. As they become more fluent with these number relationships, they're making connections, they're noticing patterns, they're wondering things, and developing proportional reasoning. So it's been fantastic, and I appreciate all of you joining us tonight. And if you have any questions, we'll open it up for the Q&A.
I think most of the questions were answered kind of as you went. I don't know if I saw any outstanding questions, but if anyone has any outstanding questions, please feel free to post them in the chat window right now. And while we're waiting for any potential questions to show up, I'd like to thank Molly for presenting tonight.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
And while we're waiting to see if any questions pop up, I'll just mention that next week we will be hearing about meeting students' mathematical and learning needs. And the speaker next week will be Andrew Rodriguez. So I hope some of you will be able to return to see us for that. Another thing I'd like to add is that we are currently looking for additional people to help with the Global Math Department, specifically with hosting. So that would be doing the job like I am doing right now. And if you're interested in doing that, I would encourage you to reach out to me. Just use the email globalmathdepartment@gmail.com. And I will send you some information. If you're interested in doing that, you will receive training and a mentor to help you with hosting your first webinar.
And I will just, I'll come back to a couple things that came up. I will share the next slide, which is some of the resources. So the first one is the pattern block paper, and it's, someone put a link in there. This one is pretty close to actual size. So if that would be a good support for your kiddos, that it does match up with the pattern blocks. If you're interested in what the actual week one and week two for the second grade one looks like, the pattern blocks one is there and the tiles is there as well. Again, go to Steve Wyborny's website. He has so many incredible resources to check out, and check out its primary tiles or the square tiles. Lots of variations there. Can't recommend that enough. The play on Google Drawing was bit.do/playctw1. And then I'm not sure exactly the best way to share the Desmos activity, because you can't search for it because it's not made by Desmos. So I'm new to Desmos, so I'm not exactly sure the best way, but if you're interested, you can reach out to me and I'm happy to share. I have three different versions of that, creating the hole with different values for the hexagon. And then the last one is, if you go to the Math Learning Center, that's where they have the pattern block shapes. So you can move them, manipulate them there. And then you can also change the colors and play around with that, so that kids are not just used to calling it the yellow piece, that they have to name it when they're ready for that, naming it with the shape. So that's a lot of fun to play around with those pattern blocks there. And lots of other options. And I look forward to continuing learning together about how do we get kids to play with these number relationships and do it in a way that's engaging and fun for everyone.
I did see one question, Molly, in the chat window. And that was asked by Leah Munster. She asked, what are some extensions you could have at a high school level? I don't know if you've had anybody explore these at a higher level.
I have not yet. That's a great question. And maybe I'll reach out to some of the high school folks in my district and see what they might do with it. So I'll explore that. But that is a good question.
All right. I don't see any other questions in the chat window. But if you have questions for Molly, you know, you can definitely reach out to her. Her Twitter handle is there, Rotting Molly. So you can definitely contact her, or if you contact the Global Math Department, we can also get you linked up with Molly. So thank you very much, Molly.
Great, absolutely. Great to see everyone, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.